Hi, Razor community, and thanks for joining us for another episode of the Razor Sharp Show, where we all hang out to stay sharp. We are your hosts, Ray Milodoni and Matt Romania. Matt, can you share why our podcast exists?
Our podcast exists to educate, inspire, and motivate you to help you reach your goals and make a positive impact in the world.
That's right, and we just love making our podcast every week and want to thank you, our listeners, for all the ongoing support you have shown. If this is your first time listening, well, welcome to the Razor community.
So if you want to move the needle forward and get closer to your goals, stick around as you're going to enjoy this.
Are you prepared to grow your business today? Stay tuned for what's about to occur. This is the Razor Sharp Show with your host, Ray Milodoni. Stay tuned as Ray invites business owners and entrepreneurs onto the show from all over the world to discuss how they are owning this economy and how you can as well. Are you ready to sharpen your saw? Here's your host, Ray Milodoni.
Hello, Razor community, and welcome to another episode of the Razor Sharp Show. Our guest today has taken his company to over seven figures. He's spent more than $3 million in the online advertising industry, and he's had six product launches hitting over six figures each. He runs many companies and is a great friend of mine, Charlie Vella. Welcome to the Razor Sharp Show.
Thanks so much, Ray, and thank you for that kind intro. It sounds fantastic hearing like that. I had the same experience with Matt. I was a little bit like humbled from it, like, wow, it sounds really nice.
Yeah, well, you've achieved some great things, and I know the Razor community is going to get a lot of value from what you have to share with us today. But let's get them to know you a little bit better. What is it that Outsourcing Angels and yourself does?
Yeah, so great question. So obviously, well, not obviously, this is a lot of new things here, but I'm Charlie. I'm the co-founder of Outsourcing Angels, and that's a company that specializes in, I guess, offshore work, working with virtual assistants overseas, and then just offshore team development as well.
Awesome. Also, outsourcing is such a hot topic at the moment. That's why I'm excited to be giving the Razor community a whole month of outsourcing value. So if you're listening to these podcasts, make sure you check out the others because they've got a lot of value coming out in the next couple of weeks. So make sure you're a subscriber. So Charlie, why is outsourcing such a hot topic at the moment?
Well, I think anything that kind of increases the ROI on a business is always going to be attractive. So we look at things like sales and marketing, and like when that comes into a business correctly, it's exciting. Our revenue goes up, our profit goes up. So the other side of that is outsourcing, where we get to play in, I guess, the efficiency side of things. It's how do we get quality work done in the most cost-effective manner? And for someone like me, that's obviously a very attractive topic. It's something I've had to deal with a lot. And I really think it's kind of the small business or entrepreneur's advantage for these days and how we kind of take on the bigger companies.
Love that. And so was outsourcing something like, did you do this to scratch your own itch? Was it something that you were exploring and you wanted to outsource and you couldn't find a solution? So you went and built a company that solves that problem?
Short answer, yes, definitely. Yeah. So at the time I was running an advertising agency and we were experiencing some growing pains. We had a kind of fast growing company that wasn't really looking after our cash flow. So when we go into that, it means we're kind of getting clients quicker than we were kind of paying our staff and a few things like that. And we ended up in kind of a negative cash flow position, even though the company was doing really well. Had tried some other solutions. I won't name them because I still think they're fantastic companies. It just wasn't for us.
Yep.
And said, look, this is something we need to be able to solve. At the time, you know, the universe will do crazy things. And Lynn Padetti, who was my fellow co-founder, come into my life and she said, look, I've got this idea and I want you to come and work with me on it. And it kind of just all fell into place in a really good way. And then we got traction very early on in the first few weeks with the company. And then it's been a whole heap of fun there to the point where that now that's pretty much all I do. Like Outsourcing Angel is the focus and having a lot of fun with that in 2017.
Excellent. And so how long has Outsourcing Angel been operating for?
So we're coming into about 2.5 years now. Awesome. Which is exciting. So it's a fairly new company still, but I like to think it's been going well for a while.
Yeah.
Starting to go well.
Awesome. And so when customers have engaged your service for some time, what's the one thing that they're really thankful for? Like what's the biggest problem you solve?
The biggest problem we solve, I think, would have to be getting the idea of that you have to do everything going that way. So I think a lot of people are really, once they start working with us, their mindset around how they work with us kind of changes. So in the beginning with the business, like, we take a lot of things on, we do everything. And that's the nature, like, you know, you've got to do that in the beginning. But what ends up happening is, like, you realize you don't have time to do everything as the company grows.
Yeah.
So when we move into that next stage of entrepreneurship, we start adding in things that we don't do at all. And what's really exciting is when, you know, a client contacts us and said, well, look, this is the idea. How do I get people to do this so I never do it? So never have touched it. And I think that's probably the most thankful thing people end up in for.
Love it, love it. Charlie, let's get to know you a little bit better. How did you make your first dollar?
My first dollar, eBay. So literally I was selling men's hairless products on eBay.
Awesome.
It was the first dollar I made online, or first dollar in entrepreneurship, I should say.
Perfect, perfect. Excellent, good stuff. And so when did you know that you were wired for business?
Yeah, great question. For me, it's one of those things where I look back at this moment and go, wow, like, I was always in it. In grade three, something that was huge in my life was Pokemon cards.
Right.
Like, it was such a generational thing that just took the grade three community of St. Jude's by storm. And what actually happened is, like, I noticed that a lot of my friends that went to different schools, so these might have been kids from the footy club or however I knew them, they were also into these Pokemon cards, but the schools had different gradings. So, for instance, one Pokemon card would be more valuable at my school than it was at his, and he would have cards that were more valuable at his than were at mine. So I quickly discovered what's known as arbitrage.
Yeah.
So I was trading for the cards that were valuable to him to get the cards that were valuable for me at my school, and that was the start of how I kind of collected all the Pokemon cards from nothing. And I think my mum was a bit curious, as we didn't necessarily buy all these cards, but just with the trading skills ended up with the set. And when I look back on that, that was definitely the foundations of, like, yeah, I was always in business.
So you're basically saying that Pokemon can be a reason to be successful in business.
Absolutely. That's a good a starting block as any, I think.
Love it. Love it. Love it. So what's a book or that you've read or listened to that has absolutely changed your life?
Yeah, another great question there. So definitely for me, it was a book by Roger Hamilton, and it was called The Millionaire Master Plan. And why that changed my life so much is at the time when I was in business, I guess I was trying to do so many things that everyone else was doing, but just wasn't getting traction at all. What I loved about, I guess, Roger Hamilton's approach is he had a profile test, which kind of uncovered a few things about me and kind of put me in a direction that was more suited. So for me, I'm not the most, how can I put this, extroverted entrepreneur. Like, the spotlight is not something I enjoy. Even now, I'm a little bit nervous on these type of things. But what this kind of, you know, made me very aware of is that I'm suited to what's called a mechanic in his book, where I'm very good at systems and procedures and building out strategies on the back end. And whenever I'm involved in that, I have most of my success. But if I try to be an extrovert, that's kind of hasn't always worked for me.
Yeah, love that. And so have you used the power of what you've learned in that to attract other people who are of other personality types to work alongside?
Yeah, definitely. So funnily enough, Lynn Perdetti was into Roger Hamilton's stuff as well, and she's the exact opposite to me.
Awesome.
So for me, I'm very much more introverted and strategy-based, and she's very much extroverted and community-based. Like, she loves being around people and very social and all those things. So when we gel together on projects, like, the mindset and thinking that works around these things has just been instrumental in how we work together.
Love it, love it. Razor community, I think it's really important to think about that and reflect that if you are looking to get into business with someone else, that, you know, often we try and find people who are similar to us that, you know, we kind of have good rapport with, and sometimes that can be a mistake when it comes to business. So, Charlie, thanks for sharing that. I think it's a really good distinction to take away.
Yeah, and I would really encourage anyone that look up Roger Hamilton. He's got a profile test on his website. I think it's about $40. But what's crazy is, like, you go through that and you come out with something that maybe you go, well, actually, this is a bit more of the path I want to be amongst.
Yeah.
So it definitely helped me a lot. And, like, I think a lot of people can gain a lot from that.
Awesome. Love it. Love it. And I know there's a lot of moving parts when it comes to business. And sometimes people want to bite off more than what they can chew. But what's something that you've changed in your business that's, like, the smallest thing and it's had the biggest positive impact?
Are you ready? I'm going to get this down to one sentence, okay?
Ooh, ready, ready.
Everything is on the way, not in the way.
Right, excellent.
Which is a DeMartini saying, but this small one-liner just absolutely shifted how I deal with problems. So I'll give you an example here, so, and you know, I'm sure a lot of people will be able to relate to this. So let's say we want to get to somewhere, like we've got a destination in mind. Now, every time a roadblock or, you know, an email or anything comes in that, you know, diverts us from that or makes it take longer to get there, our general nature is we get a bit shitty. Like, and I certainly was. Like, I was, you know, another email I've got to send or a call or anything. I just want to do this. And what I came to realize is that, you know, all these experiences and things are something that the universe has kind of put in there that's an on the way, not in the way. So the classic scenario is you get a red light. But if you got the green light, you know, you might have been in a car accident. So maybe that red light was the exact thing that you needed to get where you need to get, or sliding doors scenario type thing. So when you start kind of looking at, you know, all the problems and challenges in your life are actually there to get you where you need to be, and you're being provided with all these things, it's funny that your stress level just, you know, kicks down about 20 points. Yeah. And for me, I used to be quite a stressed individual at one point, and like that one sentence just absolutely shifted, and I'll say it all the time, and it's been, I guess, the biggest change in my happiness and how I go about in the day-to-day, without a doubt.
Excellent, excellent. And for the Raise Them community, one more time, what is your quote?
So the quote is that everything is on the way, not in the way.
I absolutely love that. I love that. You know, it's I can share from experience as well. I used to get very heated on the road, and you know, now when I get stuck behind someone that's driving really slow, I've reframed that as like my speeding ticket prevention mechanism. So, you know, this person's going to prevent me from getting a speeding ticket. So I just sit behind them, and it's, you know, taught myself patience, and you know, it's definitely a good little quote and, you know, a great one. So I want to talk a little bit about what a day in the life of you is like with someone who I'm assuming has a lot of VAs and people that you can outsource tasks to. What does the average day for you look like?
Yeah, great question. So I'm very much into pretending I'm a professional athlete. That's a very high priority for me at this point in my life. So I get up and I train most mornings in road cycling. At that time, like, I'm obviously spending majority of my time thinking. And overdoing. So a lot of the things is about coming up with strategies and ideas that take things forward. Obviously do have to still, well, I don't have to, but I choose to go to work. Like to connect with a lot of the staff and get a feel for how things are from there. So maybe check in at about 10 o'clock, go over anything I need to go over or know about at the company. And then in the afternoon, I like to spend some time doing education stuff. So learning more about how I can be, you know, more effective, or things that interest me and ideas I want to take into it. So the average day for me is revolving a lot around thinking and strategy, very little around implementation. So I have teams and project managers and things like that that take care of that whole side of things. Something you probably, you know, have heard of is we all use this sentence of, you know, you've got to work on your business, not in your business. And I think a lot of people want to achieve that. But that's something I've kind of put a lot into, and like, reality is that's my life. Mm. I'm not required on any day. I don't have to go into work on any day. Even in that question, I'm like, oh, wow, what does the average day look to me? Because there's not many average days. Something that's, I guess, you know, a little bit, you know, fun is like I put a lot more value on connecting with people in the company and around the company, so that we can spawn new ideas and think of things that I guess it is going to take us into that next adventure.
Yeah, love that. And so how many outsource workers do you have working for you on a daily basis?
Directly with me?
Yeah.
Okay, so how it works for me is I have my main VA, which is Judy, the lovely Judy, who will be listening to this, no doubt. She'll get to listen to it. And she is literally my boss. So she's the connecting point for me, and she'll kind of, you know, make sure all the tasks and things go from there. So I'll spend my time with Judy, and then Judy will delegate and take care of all the things and give it to the team so things can be done, or deal with client issues or things that come up before they get to me.
Awesome, awesome. That's so fantastic. I think, you know, a lot of people will hear that and be quite inspired by what the potentials are when it comes to outsourcing and having staff do the work for them. So I kind of want to just touch on the outsourcing side of things, because I know that we live in this world where, you know, people have some complexes in regards to how they feel about outsourcing their work. Now, I don't really want to take this more from a control freak, like letting go type of scenario. I want to take it more from like feeling comfortable with maybe the different hourly rates or the different work arrangements and so forth. So how do you talk someone through with the objective of going, oh, well, I really feel bad, you know, underpaying this staff member in what we kind of call our going rates? What's the world look like on these offshore sides of things?
Yeah, it's a great question. So the first thing I'll go from there is, like, it's a very different, like, anyone who's traveled will tell you how different the world is depending on where you go. And, you know, it comes back to what I was talking about the old story of the Pokemon cards, about things have different value in different places depending on where you're at. So in the Philippines, for instance, which is where majority of our staff come from, being a virtual assistant and being on the rates that they're on is seen as such a good career. Like, we wouldn't necessarily view it that way, but to them, it's, you know, it's an important career. It's a noticeable career. It's a good career path. So for them, they're very excited to be in these roles and be achieving what they are achieving. It's only in the recent years, thanks to the internet, that these type of opportunities in employment has been really available. So it's world changing. And I want to give you something here that to give you some perspective is that my VA Juvie has recently got a car. And how uncommon that is in the Philippines to have a car.
Wow.
So for her, like, that's been a really life-changing experience, and the things they think about has gone through. So they're incredibly grateful and thrilled, and it feels really good to be able to give that to someone's life. So when you're in Australia or hiring someone local, you don't necessarily have that type of impact. Mm. So the amount of good you're actually able to do is insane. And I mean, to top that off, obviously we employ a lot of people over there, so that's a really good feeling. But we also feed a lot of kids over there as well. So we do a lot of charity work in the Philippines to take that a step further and then run programs in the schools to have people that are in school trained up so they can be employed as VAs and take on those types of things.
Yeah, love that. Love that. Mm. And so I've heard reports where over there, you know, in the Philippines, there's a lot of people who want to work for Western companies and so forth. And that in some degrees, I've heard that there's like an oversupply of people in certain fields. Is that the case? Like, are people literally lining up to be employed by, you know, a Western type of company?
Yeah, it's seen as like, and again, it's seen as like such an interesting thing where they really enjoy saying they work for a Western company, which is fantastic.
Yeah.
And I think it's seen as it's a more of a secure thing, like the employment is secure and trustworthy and things like that. Yes, I would say there's an oversupply of, you know, people in certain areas, but there's never an oversupply of good people.
Right.
So the game is, you know, making sure that you're trained up and doing all the right things, just like you would in Australia. I mean, it's no different in any job market. I'm sure if you wanted to be a surgeon these days, like, you've got to get that 99 enter score to even be, you know, considering it.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of things in place. Yeah. Oh, that's it. Hey.
Yeah. And so, like, that's one of the things I wanted to cover off, because I believe, like, you're a little, like, Outsourcing Angel is one of those turnkey type of websites and businesses where, like, I could just come to you with a brief and you kind of get it sorted and you find the talent and so forth. So is your talent pool certified? Do they do training?
Yeah, it's a great question as well. So that's one of the things we've tried to make different at Outsourcing Angel. And this is something I was discussing with Matt, and I went a bit deeper with him. So make sure you tune into that other episode if you want to know more there. But essentially, what we come back to in here is that the reason why you would use a company like Outsourcing, or actually I'll go even further, I'll say the number one reason people fail with outsourcing and, you know, a VA is not having the things in place to work with them properly. Mm-hmm. It's not having the systems and procedures. Most people just hire and then go, oh, hey, can you take care of this? And then there's no accountability or anything. So when you work with some company like Outsourcing Angel, you're able to come with this, you know, with that brief you mentioned, and wear that safety net that ensures, you know, the person has the skills where they can do it, that you've given good instructions so that, you know, there's no vagueness in your task and it can be completed well. And then the other thing is making sure the business has got a structure or something to work with. So the example I'll use is, you know, let's pretend you do something in your business and you would like a VA to do it. You know, something that just seems so, you know, when I say it, everyone goes, oh, that's a great idea. Is like, how good would it be if you screen recorded yourself doing that task and then you gave it to a VA as training so they could watch that video and then do that task exactly as you do?
Yeah.
It's funny that that's never, ever, ever happened since I've been doing it. No client has ever come with that, you know, up front, because we all feel we're fantastic communicators. We all think we can explain things really well, when in fact, you know, a lot can be lost in text or translation, even with, you know, people locally. So it's all about kind of keeping communication high and then making sure we can get through those things.
Yeah, that's great. I think it's funny that you say that, because sometimes it's the most simplest things, like recording what you do and capturing that and sharing that as like training material. It's almost so simple that it's overlooked so often, you know. And so now I want to kind of just scenario and say, like, we've been working with Outsourcing Angel for 6 months and we've got a really solid virtual team or person, and all of a sudden their life circumstances change and they need to move countries or they decide to no longer work. What happens there? Do we get kind of left in the dark, or do you have measures in place to find new talent and pop someone else into that role?
Yes, I'm a very big fan of someone else you've had on your show, Ray, called Michael Gerber.
Yes.
And he wrote a fantastic book called The E-Myth. And the context of the E-Myth is that every business owner should have their business, you know, system-based and not people-based for these things that are exact there. So what's really interesting is, like, it doesn't matter what your business is or where your staff is. If you've got a business that's reliant on them and they disappear, so, in Australia, same things can happen. We can get left in the dark. So something we encourage all people to do is, like, I call it the Noah's Ark. And this was a concept I picked up from James Shranko. I'm not going to take the credit for it, where you've got to have two of everything.
Yeah.
You've got to have the ability where everyone can be replaced, or there was training or skills available where someone can be replaced easily. So this comes back to, you know, your responsibility as a business owner, where if you've got these type of key man risks, the challenges do come up. Now, of course, we offer a replacement warranty. So, you know, the thing is, we like to be involved in life circumstances and, you know, for whatever reason, if someone needs to go, the idea of, you know, having a week transition where they can train a new person or work with a new person makes a massive difference. For whatever reason, that might not happen. So we've got to have, you know, training and systems and ideas ready so that someone can go into this. And again, everyone read the E-Myth. It'll serve you well, I promise, and work through and have those things in place.
Yeah, love that, love that. And do you offer a platform where people get to manage their VAs and then see what they're working on and so forth? Or do you just equip people with the right tools to make sure they get it right?
Yeah, so a couple of things there. So if you're a business and you've already got your own measures in place, then obviously you want to adapt the VA to what your business is doing, because that's going to make you as streamlined as possible. For someone that's a bit newer or doesn't have these type of things, like, we recommend a tool called Basecamp. We believe that is the simplest way to get started with, you know, how to manage your projects and outputs and kind of day-to-day deadlines. The thing I really, really encourage people to think about, though, is that a lot of us can get caught up in, you know, how someone's spending every minute of their day, rather than, you know, what they're spending their day on. So the example I'll give you is, like, you know, we could be micromanaging someone on a task that actually offers us no value as a business. But if we've got a task we know is worth $100 to our business and we're only paying a VA $30 to do that, that's a great return on investment. So it's all about, you know, the mindset we take into, you know, let's make sure our company's making money and be output focused rather than being a, you know, micromanager type. We're going, oh my God, did you go on a bathroom break? You better not have, you know, that 5 minutes.
Yeah, yeah. Micromanaging, you know, sometimes it's a waste of energy and resources, and it puts people on an edge that they don't really feel trusted, and, you know, it's counterproductive in a way.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. And how do you deal with the culture differences and, like, say, language barriers and so forth? Do you train your clients to overcome that, or do you have the virtual assistants trained to kind of understand the language barriers and, you know, local language and so forth?
Yeah, so the number one trouble we have is Aussie slang. Like, occasionally we say words and they just go, what? Which is, you know, completely understandable. I'm sure if you even went to other English, you know, first language countries, that you'd have the same endeavors. Fortunately for us, like, English is just so well spoken over there. It's, you know, it's as good as it gets to speaking to someone here, which is fantastic. It makes that transition very, very easy. Where I see the biggest challenge in communication is actually typing.
Okay.
It's actually how we communicate over text. So when you think about it, when you type something, there's no emotion in it. So whenever we lose how we, you know, project our voice or move our hands and things like that, that's where the biggest losses come from. So what I encourage everyone to do, especially in the beginning of a new relationship with a VA, is having, you know, all your communications done over Skype by voice. And then we have measures in place where we want to talk to our girls about, you know, making sure you're crystal clear on things. Like, if you don't understand something, like, you know, ask the right questions, and then don't be scared to recap. So if we, you know, recap a conversation and I confirm what you just said, like, that's a really great way to make sure people are on the same page. I think a really important part of this is, you know, CEO education or boss education, if you will, from this side as well. When I first started working with a VA, it was interesting how quickly I worked out my communication was shit house. So, like, I would give, a task to a VA or two VAs and see what would come back, and I'd be like, wow, what happened here? And it's like only when, you know, through experience that you go, okay, And, you know, we spoke of a really, you know, important one about, you know, a screen recording. And another friend of mine had a really good idea about the idea of definition of done. Like, can we show our virtual assistant or person in our team, you know, what the finished product should look like? Because even if they can see that, like, what a difference it could make. So I'll give you an example here, because this is a really funny story. It's like, you know, I asked a virtual assistant once to get me an image of a couple on a bench. And I got like 400 images that come back to me, and they're all, you know, very, very different. But how different does this become when I say, look, I would like a black and white photo that's 1200 by 1200 pixels of a male and female, you know, heterosexual couple sitting on a bench about to kiss, and the male has brown hair and the female has blonde hair. You can see how in-depth we can get and how descriptive we can get can really change things.
Yeah.
So, and I think entrepreneurs are almost guilty of this more than anything, of like, we can be very big picture and then no detail, and often expect others to have that detail for us.
Yeah, love that. I think that's really good, you know, just to slow down, because even taking an extra 30 seconds to write a more descriptive instruction is going to save you the pain of having to sort through thousands of images just because, you know, the brief was interpreted a little bit different, or having to go back and say, no, this is what I meant. And now you've actually just wasted more time as opposed to just being a bit more descriptive. And you're quite right. I think, you know, a lot of people, even just running businesses here in Australia or, you know, in other parts of the world, would get that wrong and struggle to manage a team and, you know, not transfer what that exact vision detail looks like.
Yeah, absolutely.
Excellent. Charlie, are you ready for the Razor round?
Definitely. I've never been more prepared in my life.
Awesome. So share with the Razor community someone who's been a mentor for you.
Ben Zimgan has had a heavy influence on my entrepreneur career.
Yeah. And what is it? Why?
Well, originally I started working with Ben to learn advertising, but his kind of way of strategic thinking. So that's something I would say that, you know, it's not something he's commonly known for, but the way he solves problems and thinks about business is just so unique. And it's definitely, well, I hope has rubbed off on me in a really good way. I think it has. And that's the most important part.
That's it. Love it. And what's something you know now that you wish you knew 5 years ago?
That I don't have to do everything.
How fitting for your outsourcing.
Oh, I know. it's an interesting one when I look at it. And like, this is the one that particularly got me, was my email.
Yeah.
And I was like, you know, I really thought that I had to do my email, where I'm going to be upfront. I haven't checked my inbox in a very long time. Like, that all gets done for me now.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, when you start crossing those barriers, you quickly realize that you've made up stories of the things you have to do.
Yeah, love it. And do you think that's a control freak kind of thing, or do you think that's just because people think that that's normal now, that that's how you run businesses, by being busy in emails?
I would say that it's one of the more challenging things to go. I think there's an element of privacy when it comes to email. When you think about it, it's like, you know, my barrier was like, oh my God, they're going to be in my inbox. You know, they could, you know, see things or email things to people. And I was like, hang on, there is nothing interesting in here at all. Like, what are they going to see? And then the next part of that was like, you know, what are they going to send? Like, really, who are they going to send something to that's actually going to, you know, cause a bad thing to happen? And I was like, well, no one. So, you know, especially with it, and I've got a great video on this I'd be more than happy to share, but it's like, it's completely feasible to outsource most things. It's just coming up with the system to do it where it can be done as good as you can do it.
Yeah, love it. And so what's something in the world that you wish you could change right now?
Something I wish I could change in the world right now? Look, definitely it's some of the poorer areas overseas, you know, having access to things like, you know, that we do. I think it's especially in the Philippines with some of the stuff we see, like, we take for granted that we get 3 meals a day, although we can, you know, walk down the road and get food very, very easily. That isn't the situation for all people in the world.
And you mentioned before that you support some charities. What's the charities that you support?
Yeah, so we work with the Villani Foundation in the Philippines, and we obviously like to partner with them and help provide training for kids in schools and that, so they can become virtual assistants. So it's creating more opportunity for the youth that wouldn't necessarily have those type of things come up.
Yeah, awesome. I love that, because, you know, it gets people interested and involved, and you're supporting, you know, the young brains and really keeping, you know, everyone, you know, kind of focus on getting their career sorted and, you know, giving opportunities to somewhat. Sometimes people just don't think that way, or they can't afford to have some deeper education and so forth. So, you know, obviously Razor Sharp Show is really big on education and sharpening the mind and always kind of learning new things. So I think that's a great charity to be supporting, and it aligns really well with like what your business is all set up to do.
Yeah, it's something that was really lacking from the other things I've been involved in. Like, I'm so blessed and lucky and grateful for what I've been able to, you know, do in business. But something happens where you get to a point where you finally make a little bit of money and you realize there's more to life. Like, once you've got a little bit, and I'm not pretending I'm a bajillionaire or anything like that, but giving back is a really big part of the journey. Like, once we get to there, like, I think everyone, especially entrepreneurs, have a responsibility to make the real change in the world because, frankly, I'm not sure where else it's going to come from.
Yes, I know. Absolutely. Same page with you there, mate. What's a site that you visit daily in order to survive?
Strava, definitely. Really? So that is, I guess you would call it the Facebook for cyclists, if you will.
Yeah, love it. And why cycling? Is it something that you've always done, or?
Look, it became like an, backdated a little bit. Obviously, going into entrepreneurship can be very stressful.
Yep.
So I got into cycling as a way of kind of balancing myself. It was a form of, I guess, you know, meditation and things that I was into. And I just found that the bike was a place where I could almost calm the mind to get it thinking clearly. And the addiction grows. Like, when you can kind of create that feeling, it's like, well, hang on, I want to do this every day. And then you meet other cyclists, and then this is the place we all congregate. So Strava, as I said, is kind of like the Facebook for the athletic community or the cycling community. And it's a place where we kind of come together and banter, if you will, and see what everyone else is getting up to.
Love it. Great. I love the fact that, you know, it's got nothing to do with your business, but really it does, because it gets you in the right frame of mind and keeps you fit and gets you in like a zen place. And it's not one of those shiny widget tools that's going to help you, you know, increase leads by 4,000% overnight, you know, so it's good. Love it.
No, but if you do find that tool that'll give me increased leads by 4,000%, I would definitely love that URL. I will go there daily.
But you just got to visit Facebook, all the sponsored ads, people crushing it overnight. What's the best bit of advice that you've ever received?
Yeah, so the number one piece of advice, and, you know, it's funny, right, because we actually connected recently because of this guy. So, like, I come across a guy called Kevin Trudeau a very long time ago, and he gave me one piece of advice that I'll just never forget. And I think it's so universal, and it's that, who do you listen to? And his advice was to only listen to people who have the thing or have done the thing or are the thing that you want to achieve. And I think too many of us listen to people that haven't necessarily done the thing or have the thing. And that's why we don't get the result. So that single piece of advice shaped my life in so many areas. And I'm really incredibly grateful to have received it.
Love it. I do remember that advice, and definitely is something that makes sense to me. And I've heard, you know, other variations, and one that kind of I always refer to as well is, you know, don't be the smartest person in the room. You know, get around rooms where there are other people that are smarter than you. And it's very similar, you know, be around people or listen to people who have been there, done that, got what, you know, what you kind of want. Yeah, so that's really good. And, I always go back to this whole Facebook thing, and it's like, you know, there are so many people out there acting as experts or acting like they can change your life because of their 7-step formula. And really you have to look at, have they actually really done it themselves, or are they just on, you know, a bit of smokes and mirrors type of con work type of stuff, you know?
It's a dangerous conversation we could head into here, right? Like, there's many, many, many people living the paradox of, you know, not doing what they preach.
Yes.
So, you know, obviously I hope they will change that and consider it and make sure they're, you know, living an ethical path. But at the same time, I think it's very, very challenging, you know, when someone has to put food on the table, they'll do interesting things.
Yep, absolutely. So definitely, you know, get around role models, and a great bit of advice. So really, really good. What is something that you've learnt fresh off the press in the last 7 days?
Yeah, I've got this one. I've got it.
Awesome.
So I went away and I come across a concept which I really, really enjoyed. And it was the idea of viewing your time like an investment. Yeah. So thinking of time the same way you think about money, and hours as income. And I was sitting there and going, you know, that if anyone wanted to make real change in their life, they could think of it. So, for instance, if I was going to invest 30% of my income into, you know, for whatever venture, I could expect a certain return on that. But if I looked at that on the other side of my time, if I invested 30% of my time into something, you know, that would be a way to see real change. So if you do a bit of an, you know, accountability to where you've been spending your time and viewing at those investments, like, that could be one of the fundamental shifts, you know, we look at to actually see a change in our life in other areas.
Love that, love that. And the Razor community knows that I always bang on about this. You know, a lot of people talk about return on investment, and I like to talk about return on effort, ROE, because, you know, time can be seen as an effort. Like, if I'm going to put effort into a task, I want to make sure that it's going to give me the best outcome or the best outputs as possible, which is the reason why I record the video version of all my podcasts, because I think, why not? I've got to take the same amount of time, I've got the same technology, same effort. Now I've got a video version and an audio version. To me, that's good ROE.
Absolutely, and I agree.
Perfect, same page. Now, if someone wrote a book about you, Charlie, what would it be?
If someone wrote a book about me, I would be scared to read it. I would like to think that it would be Had a Crack. Like, okay. It's something I can look back on as like, I've definitely had a go.
Yep. Cool, excellent, excellent. And what's your favorite productivity hack?
Got this one nailed. Are you ready?
I am.
Higher,
cool.
Yeah, like I think the thing we all look at is like, and this is something really, you know, this breaks my heart with a lot of entrepreneurs, is they're sitting there trying to find more hours in the day or trying to push themselves harder. Drowning. And all that happens is they just get burnt out. Like, you know, we have to get very real that, you know, there's only so much output we can create. So once you've, you know, maxed out your hours, we start talking about leverage. Now, you can do that through people or through tools, but in my experience, like the best thing you can do to create, you know, more time in the day or more productivity is actually have other people do it.
Yeah, I think that's really, really solid. Because, you know, one of the things that I see a lot of people doing as well is they try and learn a skill that they don't have, as opposed to just hiring a skill that someone else is already really good at. And, you know, I see it all the time, and, you know, people trying to learn things, and it's just like, you know, you can avoid all this learning and just employ or contract or hire or outsource to someone that already is, you know, nailing it and is a pro at what you're trying to learn, because you're only going to start at the amateur level and they're already at the pro level, you know.
Well, it comes back to two reasons. It's really interesting. So, like, this is something we see a lot of at Outsourcing Angel, like people just doing things they shouldn't be.
Yeah.
And the number one cause is their pricing. So if you're pricing your service or product or whatever it is, and you're not allowing room to hire people, you're not trapped having to do those things to, you know, turn a profit, which is, you know, really, really dangerous. And then the other side of that is that where we look at it. So let's say you do have your pricing right. It's your relationship with money. Like, you can only see that money and you want to keep as much of it instead of thinking bigger of growing the company. So, I mean, if anyone's sitting there, you know, hopefully those points may, you know, hurt a little bit, hit a bit of a nerve, and you want to make those changes there, like, you'll reap the rewards.
Love that. You know, the best advice is the one that you don't want to hear. So if it is making you uncomfortable, then maybe that's what you need to be hearing right now. Charlie, how can people get around what you do and learn more about Outsourcing Angel?
Yeah, so the best place to connect with me is we've got a Facebook group called the Business Owner Society, which, you know, the initials are BOS Boss. So we like to say like a boss is what we're running with at the moment.
Wow, I love that, like a boss, because you like the boss page. I love it.
Yeah, well, and the whole thing is, and the shift we want to get to people is, like, we want to get you thinking like a boss, like not like an employee or someone who's self-employed. So if, you know, anything has perked your interest or you've got curiosity on outsourcing or how you can be doing more there, look, that's a great place to connect with me and see how you can, you know, get things answered. No pressure, nothing for sale in the group. It's all just, you know, helping pass on some of this knowledge.
Love it, love it. There will be links in the show notes so everyone can get around what you're doing and be like a boss. I really love that.
I wish I could say I could come up with it, but I didn't. A good friend of mine did.
Just take it. They won't be listening. So Charlie, thanks very much for hanging out with the Razor community today. I know they're going to get so much value at what you've shared. So thanks for coming on to the show.
Thank you so much for having me, Ray. I really enjoyed it.
Excellent, excellent. Until next time, stay sharp.